Well, I got to say, I was not impressed by the president's speech. And I don't know what else to say. I was frustrated to hear the direction that he went in the speech. And, you know, so I know that a lot of people didn't listen to it. I've got the speech that he gave on the California ISIS attack right here for you so that you can make up your own mind on it. But although I do appreciate the president did get up and say something, I disagreed with the tone. I disagreed with the content, and I especially disagreed with blaming it on guns and the need to focus on the need to do more about guns. This is a terrorist attack from people who are either from another country or they're here, but their orientation is another country and another way of life. And I don't think the issue is guns, because if you get rid of guns, these people could still kill a lot of people. So I think the president missed a big opportunity, but here is his speech.
Moms and dads, daughters and sons. Each of them served their fellow citizens, and all of them were part of our American family. Tonight, I want to talk with you about this tragedy, the broader threat of terrorism, and how we can keep our country safe. The FBI is still gathering the facts about what happened in San Bernardino, but here's what we know. The victims were brutally murdered and injured by one of their co-workers and his wife. So far, we have no evidence that the killers were directed by a terrorist organization overseas or that they were part of a broader conspiracy here at home. But it is clear that the two of them had gone down the dark path of radicalization, embracing a perverted interpretation of Islam that calls for war against America and the West. They had stockpiled assault weapons, ammunition, and pipe bombs. So this was an act of terrorism designed to kill innocent people. Our nation has been at war with terrorists since Al-Qaeda killed nearly 3,000 Americans on 9/11. In the process, we've hardened our defenses, from airports to financial centers to other critical infrastructure. Intelligence and law enforcement agencies have disrupted countless plots here and overseas and worked around the clock to keep us safe. Our military and counterterrorism professionals have relentlessly pursued terrorist networks overseas, disrupting safe havens in several different countries, killing Osama bin Laden, and decimating Al-Qaeda's leadership. Over the last few years, however, the terrorist threat has evolved into a new phase. As we've become better at preventing complex, multifaceted attacks like 9/11, terrorists turn to less complicated acts of violence, like the mass shootings that are all too common in our society. It is this type of attack that we saw at Fort Hood in 2009, in Chattanooga earlier this year, and now in San Bernardino. And as groups like ISIL grew stronger amidst the chaos of war in Iraq and then Syria, and as the internet erases the distance between countries, we see growing efforts by terrorists to poison the minds of people like the Boston Marathon bombers and the San Bernardino killers. For 7 years, I've confronted this evolving threat each and every morning in my intelligence briefing. And since the day I took this office, I have authorized U.S. forces to take out terrorists abroad precisely because I know how real the danger is. As Commander-in-Chief, I have no greater responsibility than the security of the American people. As a father to two young daughters who are the most precious part of my life, I know that we see ourselves with friends and coworkers at a holiday party like the one in San Bernardino. I know we see our kids in the faces of the young people killed in Paris. And I know that after so much war, many Americans are asking whether we are confronted by a cancer that has no immediate cure. Well, here's what I want you to know. The threat from terrorism is real, but we will overcome it. We will destroy ISIL and any other organization that tries to harm us. Our success won't depend on tough talk or abandoning our values or giving in to fear. That's what groups like ISIL are hoping for. Instead, we will prevail by being strong and smart. resilient, and relentless, and by drawing upon every aspect of American power. Here's how. First, our military will continue to hunt down terrorist plotters in any country where it is necessary. In Iraq and Syria, airstrikes are taking out ISIL leaders, heavy weapons, oil tankers, infrastructure. And since the attacks in Paris, our closest allies, including France, Germany, and the United Kingdom, have ramped up their contributions to our military campaign, which will help us accelerate our effort to destroy ISIL. Second, we will continue to provide training and equipment to tens of thousands of Iraqi and Syrian forces fighting ISIL on the ground so that we take away their safe havens. In both countries, we're deploying special operations forces who can accelerate that offensive. We've stepped up this effort since the attacks in Paris, and we'll continue to invest more in approaches that are working on the ground. Third, we're working with friends and allies to stop ISIL's operations, to disrupt plots, cut off their financing, and prevent them from recruiting more fighters. Since the attacks in Paris, we've surged intelligence sharing with our European allies. We're working with Turkey to seal its border with Syria. And we are cooperating with Muslim-majority countries and with our Muslim communities here at home to counter the vicious ideology that ISIL promotes online. Fourth, with American leadership, the international community has begun to establish a process and timeline to pursue ceasefires and a political resolution to the Syrian war. Doing so will allow the Syrian people and every country, including our allies, but also countries like Russia, to focus on the common goal of destroying ISIL, a group that threatens us all. This is our strategy to destroy ISIL. It is designed and supported by our military commanders and counterterrorism experts, together with 65 countries that have joined an American-led coalition. And we constantly examine our strategy to determine when additional steps are needed to get the job done. That's why I've ordered the Departments of State and Homeland Security to review the visa waiver program under which the female terrorist in San Bernardino originally came to this country. And that's why I will urge high-tech and law enforcement leaders to make it harder for terrorists to use technology to escape from justice. Now, here at home, we have to work together to address the challenge. There are several steps that Congress should take right away. To begin with, Congress should act to make sure no one on a no-fly list is able to buy a gun. What could possibly be the argument for allowing a terrorist suspect to buy a semi-automatic weapon? This is a matter of national security. We also need to make it harder for people to buy powerful assault weapons, like the ones that were used in San Bernardino. I know there are some who reject any gun safety measures, but the fact is that our intelligence and law enforcement agencies, no matter how effective they are, cannot identify every would-be mass shooter, whether that individual is motivated by ISIL or some other hateful ideology. What we can do and must do is make it harder for them to kill. Next, we should put in place stronger screening for those who come to America without a visa so that we can take a hard look at whether they've traveled to war zones. And we're working with members of both parties in Congress to do exactly that. Finally, if Congress believes, as I do, that we are at war with ISIL, it should go ahead and vote to authorize the continued use of military force against these terrorists. For over a year, I have ordered our military to take thousands of airstrikes against ISIL targets. I think it's time for Congress to vote to demonstrate that the American people are united and committed to this fight. My fellow Americans, these are the steps that we can take together to defeat the terrorist threat. Let me now say a word about what we should not do. We should not be drawn once more into a long and costly ground war in Iraq or Syria. That's what groups like ISIL want. They know they can't defeat us on the battlefield. ISIL fighters were part of the insurgency that we faced in Iraq. But they also know that if we occupy foreign lands, they can maintain insurgencies for years, killing thousands of our troops, draining our resources, and using our presence to draw new recruits. The strategy that we are using now, airstrikes, special forces, and working with local forces who are fighting to regain control of their own country, that is how we'll achieve a more sustainable victory. And it won't require us sending a new generation of Americans overseas to fight and die for another decade on foreign soil. Here's what else we cannot do. We cannot turn against one another by letting this fight be defined as a war between America and Islam. That, too, is what groups like ISIL want. ISIL does not speak for Islam. They are thugs and killers, part of a cult of death. And they account for a tiny fraction of a more than a billion Muslims around the world, including millions of patriotic Muslim Americans who reject their hateful ideology. Moreover, the vast majority of terrorist victims around the world are Muslim. If we're to succeed in defeating terrorism, we must enlist Muslim communities as some of our strongest allies, rather than push them away through suspicion and hate. That does not mean denying the fact that an extremist ideology has spread within some Muslim communities. It's a real problem that Muslims must confront without excuse. Muslim leaders here and around the globe have to continue working with us to decisively and unequivocally reject the hateful ideology that groups like ISIL and Al-Qaeda promote, to speak out against not just acts of violence, but also those interpretations of Islam that are incompatible with the values of religious tolerance, mutual respect, and human dignity. But just as it is the responsibility of Muslims around the world to root out misguided ideas that lead to radicalization, it is the responsibility of all Americans, of every faith, to reject discrimination. It is our responsibility to reject religious tests on who we admit into this country. It's our responsibility to reject proposals that Muslim Americans should somehow be treated differently. Because when we travel down that road, we lose. That kind of divisiveness, that betrayal of our values, plays into the hands of groups like ISIL. Muslim Americans are our friends and our neighbors, our co-workers, our sports heroes. And yes, they are our men and women in uniform who are willing to die in defense of our country. We have to remember that. My fellow Americans, I am confident we will succeed in this mission because we are on the right side of history. We were founded upon a belief in human dignity, that no matter who you are or where you come from or what you look like or what religion you practice, you are equal in the eyes of God and equal in the eyes of the law. Even in this political season, even as we properly debate what steps I and future presidents must take to keep our country safe, let's make sure we never forget what makes us exceptional. Let's not forget that freedom is more powerful than fear. That we have always met challenges, whether war or depression, natural disasters or terrorist attacks, by coming together around our common ideals as one nation and one people. So long as we stay true to that tradition, I have no doubt that America will prevail. Thank you. God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.
Well, I could go into a thousand things that he said that I disagree with, but just let me sum it up by saying more of the same kind of weak response. And, you know, what did you gain after listening to that speech in terms of defending yourself and defending America that you didn't know before? I thought it was kind of a sad speech. It was depressing to listen to. And I've got some suggestions for how to make the country actually safer. And I supposed to have Pete calling in so to talk about this a little bit. He and I were going back and forth over the weekend on how to protect yourself through firepower. Kelly O'Connor, 621, you're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. It is the 7th of December. And to call in 523-1450, and we're going to come back and dig into the speech a little bit. All right, so you heard the president's speech. I played the whole speech. Pardon me for doing that, but I can't get a hold of Pete anyway, but he might call in at 6:30. But what was your reaction? He has kind of belatedly called what happened in California terrorism. I personally really don't care. I mean, if they're involved in an international ISIS, or if they were in touch with anybody, I don't care about that. That why is that the defining issue? If they're not in contact with somebody, then they can claim that it was workplace violence, right? I don't care what they who gave them directions. If it was apparently this lady who moved to Saudi Arabia, she had gotten into pharmacy school, and as time went on, she became more and more religious. And not only was she religious, and she started to, she's getting more and more religious. And then this guy gets a hold of her, and they move over here. They're calling her a honey trap. But I mean, I think both of them were trying to become more and more. Trying to be more and more religious, and at the center, at the core of religion, of the religion for some of these people, a lot of these people, you've got violence. And so, you know, I mean, are we going to just continue to kind of like, let's get together, let's sing kumbaya, let's give up our guns, let's not give up our American distinctives and stuff. I don't want to hear that. What I want to hear is what is going to happen when, you know, the United States lets loose a lot of firepower on these enclaves. And I care about boots on the ground? I want SEALs and Delta Force, and I want Army Rangers, and fill in the blank there. I want platoons of snipers sent over there to just blow these people to smithereens. It bothers me that the Russians had to go over and show us how to do it. That the apparently we were not blowing up oil infrastructure, and we were not blowing up oil tankers, in part because we didn't want the environmental catastrophe. So we're not just being told that this oil situation was, you know, the oil situation is or global warming. We're not just being told global warming is causing this, which is an insult to any thinking person's intelligence. Now we're being told that we're not doing what we can because of the fact that it was, it's going to be an environmental hazard. Are you kidding me? What do you think war is? War, by definition, is an environmental hazard. Deal with it. You know, suck it up. And we're dropping off pamphlets to this this group of people, to this people that are driving these oil tankers. We're dropping pamphlets in case they're not involved, or in case they want to get out of the tanker before we blow it up. Are you freaking kidding me? These people are driving oil tankers. They're working for ISIS. And you're not going to kill them? you know, it's just this kind of leadership that tells people, it tells us as citizens and residents, and it tells our so-called friends overseas, but these terrorists, it tells them that we're not serious. Do you see what I mean? Kind of a person, with all due respect, what kind of a person who's leading a war drops pamphlets and says, "Oh, Mr. truck driver, please don't, you know, please run away from your truck. We're about to blow it up." I mean, talk about telegraphing. All right, I think I got Pete here. Pete, is that you?
Hey, Kelly, how you doing, man?
Hey, good. Hey, all right. So, Pete, you and I were talking last night. I just played the president's entire speech, and my reaction to it is it's too pacifistic. It focuses on getting rid of guns instead of the real problem. But anyway, Pete is my friend from Florida. Pete and I was working at the law school that Pete went to. We've been very close friends ever since. I was the best man at his wedding, et cetera, et cetera. Pete was in the Marines as a JAG mm-hmm. officer, and Pete is now working for a big law firm in Florida. But good morning, Pete.
Good morning, Kelly. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. What was your reaction?
I listened to it. You know, I thought it was going to be a big deal. I thought it was going to lay out a plan, you know, a real succinct, tight plan to take out ISIS. I really didn't see that. And a lot of concerns mm-hmm. I had was that these assumptions that were made that, you know, we shouldn't judge all Muslims by what a few do. But the next question I have is, what is the Muslim community doing to ensure us that their own are not going to continue to do these things?
Yeah.
And there was nothing. I mean, if you want to make small, you know, infringements, if you will, upon the Second Amendment and our gun rights, well, what's wrong with doing small infringements? What do we call infringements? But questions on the First Amendment and the freedom of speech and the freedom of religion for these Muslims. What's being done?
Yeah. All right. So we're entering in, and what I kind of hear from you is we're entering a new age, a new time in this war on terror, where we're on the verge of accepting the fact that there's sleeper cells or there are active combatants possibly anywhere in America.
Right.
So, and I, you know, I think some people will be, I'm a little bit uncomfortable to think about, you know, treading on First Amendment rights, but you know, these people, especially bringing in people from outside the country, they don't have a right to be here. The president almost talks as if they do, though.
Yeah, it is strange. It's very bizarre. And I think, you know, he's trying to look at a very long-term picture. He's just making the assumption now that we're going to defeat ISIS and at some point we're going to have to take a look back and say, look, you know, how do we live up to our own standards during that crisis? And if we're, you know, profiling people of certain religions, then that creates a problem for us. But I think the real problem is now. I mean, now, what do we do now to protect American citizens? Because right now, we really don't have a plan. I mean, I know the FBI is working very hard. CIA is working very hard at trying to root out some of these cells. But if you look at what happened in San Bernardino, there's really, unless the family member comes forward, another Muslim, we're not going to know anything about these. What happens behind these closed doors, where there's limited communication with you know, with outside world or outside influences like ISIS.
But you know that somebody in that family knew. Nobody goes into somebody's house and sees 5,000 rounds of ammunition and bomb parts on the kitchen table and says nothing's going on here.
Right, absolutely. I think they've tried to justify and say, well, the husband was, he was into guns before he got married. But I mean, I don't know how you step over pipe bombs. You have a six-month-old child in the home.
Yeah.
Pick the mother, live with them. People would come and go frequently to see the child and see the family.
People knew.
Oh, absolutely.
People knew. Okay, so Pete, we had talked over the weekend, talked and texted about how to arm yourself, and you had bought some stuff. But let me just ask you this. Obviously, if we had people in that building who were armed personally, this thing would have not played out the way that it did. How do we get to the point where people are caring?
Well, you know, a couple things. You know, we've talked about, or President Obama mentioned the attacks last night in his speech. You look at what happened in Chattanooga, where that one lone, he was an American citizen as well, been radicalized or whatever term they want to use. But it was so bizarre. I mean, we had Marines, recruiters who were, you know, some of the best of the best who have been selected for that job to go recruiting, who weren't even allowed to carry an arm on, which is just bizarre. But then you look at what happened, I believe it was in Fort Worth, there was some free speech meeting event, and they someone tried to attack that, but they never got off the ground because people were armed there and the police were right on top of it. But the sad thing is like we don't talk about that Fort Worth shooting because there wasn't a body count. But yeah, you're right. I think the way to defeat this is to, as soon as it breaks out, we have armed citizens there, know what they're doing, or somewhat trained, who can stomp these things out because there's no effect, there's no body count.
Yeah, okay. So I'm thinking back to the history of the Second Amendment. It comes way deep out of the history of Britain when the government insisted that every boy have a bow and a couple of arrows by the time they were seven or eight. And that obviously worked out well. But here I've got five suggestions. I don't know what you think about these. Mandatory military service, number one, to train it. So everybody is trained on how to defend themselves and defend the land. Tax breaks for gun sales. Number three, soften conceal carry laws. Four, gun training in school, so that all whether the parents want the kid to own a gun, at least they're trained to use it. And then even if they're online, classes on how to detect terrorism. What do you think about those five ideas?
I like a lot of those ideas. The one thing, and I don't think you're trying to push this, I know there are some people I know who just guns scare them to death. And I think probably our current president might be one of those people. You know, they've just never been around guns. They've never fired guns. They don't really understand how guns really work. And they scare them. And I could see how if you haven't been raised in a culture or served in the military where guns are prevalent, then that's just how you're going to be. But I think those are good ideas to give the training if people want it. And I think, you know, the flip side is if someone doesn't want to use a gun or doesn't know how to use a gun, putting a gun in their hand is a bad idea.
Well, we need to have training. But, I mean, those people who don't want to be around guns, those are people, to me, who are like they go to a PETA meeting and they're anti-fur, and then they go to McDonald's for a hamburger, and they don't see any contradiction.
Right. No, I agree. But I just would hate to see someone with a gun who tries to use it who can't, and then it falls into the wrong hands in the heat of a battle.
Yeah, but I mean, what's worse? Somebody who misuses a gun during a siege where people are getting picked off one by one, or a room full of people without guns? I mean, this is not even a comparison.
Oh, sure. No, I know. But, I mean, you can just think of scenarios where it could be bad news. But I mean, if there's one person like that and there's two people with guns, I think you kind of eliminate that problem, you know. Or you just have one-to-one. If every other person has a gun, then it doesn't matter if everyone has a gun. If you have enough people in there with guns, you can eliminate the attackers.
All right. Do you agree that we need to go over to the Middle East with special forces and begin on the forces on the ground, begin to systematically wipe these people out?
Well, I think special forces is definitely the right idea. But here's what I'd never hear, and this kind of goes back to the initial point. Where are the local Muslim countries? Why is Turkey, Jordan, you know, elements of Syria, Egypt, Libya, why are these guys not getting together and creating like a Middle Eastern NATO to fight ISIS? This is what I've never understood. I mean, why are these guys, this is right on their doorstep. They're having thousands of refugees pour into their countries. Why are they not leading the fight against ISIS? Why are they not there with a huge land force saying we're going to Raqqa, we're going to Mosul? I can't comprehend why these guys are not wanting to lead the fight.
Well, I mean, obviously, despite all of the complaining, they need leadership from outside, number one. Number two, there may be a lot of ambivalence about ISIS. People might be personally afraid, but they might say there's a lot of things in ISIS that I agree with over there. But, right. but you know, there's no freedom over there. There's no freedom for individuals to get together and form a militia because the governments are – there's so much tyranny over in the Middle East.
Yeah. Well, that's a problem. I think we've in part created that, you know, by us. I mean, it's kind of argue which comes first. I mean, those countries and those leaders were somewhat developed by us some time ago. And then now, well, you know, we're kind of stuck with these poor leaders and these poor mechanisms.
Mean, they've had poor leaders. I mean, there's no democracy over there. They don't accept the idea of democracy. They really don't accept the idea of the nation state. They've never been through the formation of a modern society like the West has. Pete, do you got to go?
No, I'm good. I'm good.
Because I got to take a break here. Can I put you on hold?
Sure, man.
Thanks. Got Pete on the line. We've got to play a few ads here, folks. We're going to take a break and be back.
Things are moving.
Kelly?
Hey, Kelly.
Hey, what's up? This is Sergio?
Yes, sir.
What's up, brother?
How you doing?
Good.
I just wanted to reiterate that I called once about sending special forces there and some aggressive intel. I don't want to be on the air because I know you have your friend Pete on there, but I just wanted to reiterate on that, and that JFK wanted that in Vietnam as well. It's a good tactic because sending a vulnerable force are only going to place them as targets. That was my point when I called about a week and a half back.
All right.
And I agree with you.
Okay, man. I'll mention it when I come back on the air.
All right. Take care.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey, I fell behind on my ads when I played the president's whole speech.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hey man, if you gotta go on those stuff, man, I can drop off.
No. This is good. I just want to let you know we got a couple. Let's see, two more minutes of ads.
Oh yeah.
What time are you going to court?
Actually, pretty soon. You'll meet.
You want to catch up later?
Yeah. That's cool with you. Sorry.
No, man.
Still good to go, but
I'll talk to you later.
Man. All right, buddy.
All right, thanks for the call. Bye. Pete had to go. He's got a hearing this morning. So, you know, to me, what was remarkable about Pete is that he and I used to fight all the time about Obama. And I mentioned many times on the show these horrific arguments that I got in with him. And I didn't talk to him for a few months. When Obama won, he called up and really rubbed it in. And I was so furious at the guy. But I think that Pete has come around on Obama and realize that he does not have the stuff of leadership. Now, Pete says he's not a wartime president, but I personally feel like he's lacking in understanding how to lead, period. You know, I don't understand if he were to step back a little bit from his leftism and his anti-gun and all this stuff, and think about it. If he was in a room and some gunman came in and told everybody to lay on the floor and started shooting people, would he rather at that moment for the people on the floor that there was more or less gun rights, more, you know, easier to get concealed carry or what? You know, even one thing about this, you're in a room with 100 people, 200 people, 500 people, whatever, and a gunman comes in, even one person who is carrying a weapon will totally change the chemistry of that room. You're not going to have, like in the situation up in Colorado with that crazy guy with the orange hair just calmly starts shooting people. You're going to have somebody taking a shot, and all of a sudden this guy is not going to know where the bullets are flying from, and is going to have to, in some sense, get in a defensive position. So I really think that to survive, we need mandatory military service so that all people are trained in weapons and self-defense. And I really think that we need to soften, not make harder, concealed carry laws. And, you know, I really think that there should be gun training in school for kids. I mean, how else are you going to get guns in the hands of people? Because obviously the government is not going to step back from inviting these people in from, you know, foreign places that are radicalized. But we've got people living in this country, and there's an important debate that we need to have in the country over Islam. And I mean, this idea that it's a religion and you can't be, you know, too hard on it. You can't look at it too hard because we can't give up our values. You know, when I heard the president say that, I just had this vision of this kind of like, you know, the kind of leftism that commits suicide, the kind of leftism that's so into its own ideas and beliefs and standards. I mean, where do these standards come from? I mean, you know, President Lincoln dismissed habeas corpus for a while, you know, and he's supposed to be one of the greatest, most humane presidents in history. In times of war, there are differences, but I think that the way that we've approached it has caused Islam to not take us seriously, has caused radical Islam to not take us seriously. And I do accept that there is a difference between radical Islam and other types of Islam. But if you look at the number of people that support jihad in all these different countries, you'll be surprised at the high numbers. We're bringing in people that at least theoretically support jihad. And, you know, I think that we need to have a conversation about that. I mean, that's my impression, but I mean, how is that wrong? And the president doesn't want us to be overly, you know, critical of Islam, but is that not in part because he was raised in a Muslim country and is, you know, some of his authority figures in his life were Muslim? He went to a madrasa in Indonesia when he lived there. That he's seen peaceful Islam and he is now confused peaceful Islam for all Islam. I mean, for him to say that, you know, there's this giant difference between the two, from radical Islam and regular Islam, I don't think a lot of people would agree with that. 649, Kelly O'Connell. And you're listening on the 7th of December to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. 523-1450, 523-1450. Call in, especially if you disagree or if you have any more ideas on how to make us safe. And we'll be right back to talk about this.
Keep yourself respect, your man before
it's Kelly.
Kelly Sprouse.
Hey, what's up, man?
December 7th, 1941.
Wow, man. I didn't think about that.
I just thought I'd call you off the air. Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, man. Hey, it's Kelly.
Kelly Sprouse again. I forgot
the
other
data.
You are on the air.
It's Kelly here, and we have Ralph. And Ralph, go ahead.
I forgot to give you this other date I wanted to give you. August 6, 1946, 10:15 a.m.
Okay, and what is it? Hello?
When the United States dropped the first atomic bomb on Hiroshima.
Oh, okay. All right, and commentary on that, or what?
I said it before on the air. These people need to be nuked and have the same results as was happened in Japan. You know, the Japanese were not going to surrender, and They put the fear of God in them, like I said once before, and that's the way to go, and not put any more troops on the ground. Why? When you have the weapon to do it.
Very interesting.
It's the fact. It's facts. That's history. It took place, and then it got results.
Well, it did get results, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of popular support for using nuclear weapons.
It was in the late 40s, the 50s, and the 60s.
Well, I mean, you know, we're living at the time we're living in, and there's a lot of emotional response about nuclear war, and it's already been stated that the way that Russia is involved over in the Middle East now, we could easily find ourselves in World War III if we got crossways with them.
Correct. You're very right.
So I don't know if that's the best thing.
Kelly, the end justifies the means, whatever it takes. I'm a firm believer in that.
Pragmatism.
Whatever.
All right, Ralph, anything else?
No, thank you, Kelly.
Thanks for the call. You too. December 7th is the day that we were attacked in Pearl Harbor. And today is the 7th. So do you agree with Ralph that we should consider using tactical nuclear weapons against ISIS? Why sacrifice American lives when we have small nuclear weapons that would take them out? Now, I don't think that the problem with using a nuclear weapon, besides the fact that I think it would be very unpopular internationally, at least there would be a lot of protests. It would cause a lot of countries to oppose us. But, you're killing the just and the unjust with a nuclear weapon, right? And then you're creating a lot of nuclear waste behind. But there is an article that just came out that said that we're using so many bombs that we're running out of bombs for the regular military. And I just got a phone call, and then the light stopped. So if you want to call in right now. But so anyway, the president's tone was wrong. His attitude was wrong. His ideas were wrong. I agree with making it harder to come from countries where there are war zones, but these two people didn't come from war zones. I was doing a little bit more research over the weekend, and you know, the person who helped establish Wahhabism in Saudi Arabia had worked with the king that founded the Saudi Empire. And together they established the country today. That's why there's so much Wahhabism over there. And that's why it's so popular. You're never really going to get rid of it. But what if we worked with these countries and said to them, you need to shut down these radical mosques over in Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Iran, and other places. You need to get rid of these radical mosques, or, you know, if you want any support from us, you got to let us in to shut them down. Because what you get in these countries, and it is an extraordinary amount of anti-Americanism. I mean, why should we have any positive dealings with Saudi Arabia if while we are trying to be their partner? And obviously a lot of it has to do with oil, but that nonetheless, we're their partner and we're supporting them militarily. They are allowing radical teaching to go on across their nation that propagandizes the people into thinking that America and Israel are Satan, and that we are the source of all their problems over there. There's a lot of these countries, a lot of these societies, the government, you know, there's collusion between the government and the media because they're all tyrannies. They're all controlled from the top down. And there's no information going out in the newspapers or the TV or radio, internet, that is not conscripted by the government, that is not directed by the government. And so in all of this teaching, which America is made to be the white devil or the great Satan, it's all directed by the government. And to a large degree, the government is doing it because they're failed states. and they can't really explain why their own activities are so failed, their economies and their freedoms are so lacking. So they blame it on us. They blame it on Israel. It's 6:59. You're listening to AM Las Cruces on 1450 KOBE. 523-1450, 523-1450. I am going to get into the NFL and NCAA as well as more ISIS. And so hang in there, and we'll be right back. Hey, it's Kelly.
Kelly, off the air.
Yep.
I have nuclear radiation sickness. That's bad, really bad. Kidneys went, lungs went. I was in a coma at Mountain View for 48 hours.
Wow.
Almost died. 13 heart attacks, because it hit the kidneys, the lung, the heart. Quadruple bypass, 5 stents. Then it affected my eyes. I went blind. I couldn't even cross the street, Kelly, because I couldn't see. Now, I should be against that nuclear weapons, and I'm not.
Right. Okay. Well, that says something.
I wanted you to know that. Not. I didn't want to be on the air. I don't want any sympathy or anything like that. But that is, nuclear radiation is really horrible, and I am I'm suffering from it.
Sorry to hear that, man.
That's all right. No, I don't want anybody else to know. That's why I wanted to be off the air.
Thanks,
Kelly. Bye.
All right, thanks. Bye. All right, so in keeping with December 7th, here's a little bit on the surprise attack against the United States and Hawaii at Pearl Harbor. Of course, the Arizona is still down there, and I've actually been there to see the memorial. But we could see California as a Pearl Harbor. Our Pearl Harbor, our modern Pearl Harbor, was really 9/11. But check this clip out.
Dawn, December 7, 1941, the Pacific Ocean. A Japanese task force was also heading for Oahu. Mission, sneak attack. Primary target, Pearl Harbor and Hickam Field. Exactly at 0600, the fateful signal was given. And the first wave, 200 fighters, horizontal bombers, torpedo bombers, and dive bombers roared off.
One moment, please.
1234, hello NBC, hello NBC, this is KTU in Honolulu, Hawaii. I am speaking from the roof of the Advertiser Publishing Company building. We have witnessed this morning the distant view, a brief battle off Pearl Harbor, and a severe bombing of Pearl Harbor by enemy planes, undoubtedly Japanese. The city of Honolulu has also been attacked, and considerable damage done. This battle
I don't know if you can hear that, but it's actual footage or broadcasting from the attack on Pearl Harbor. So anyway, we've got our own Pearl Harbor that we're dealing with now, this attack of radical Islam. And I got to ask a couple of questions. Do you differentiate in your mind between radical Islam and Islam? Number one. Number two, do you agree with the president that the problem is guns? And that if we only had better gun laws, that we wouldn't be dealing with these type of attacks. And I do want to point out while asking that, that California has probably the strictest gun laws in America. And number three, what do you think that we should do about all of this? I mean, what should we do? What can we do? We have lived over here in America, in the United States, had a lot of peace, a lot of safety. And while Europe has gone through a couple of world wars and a lot of other stuff, and obviously they're dealing with the brunt of these civilian attacks from Islam in the non-war zones. The question is now, are we going to be suffering that as well here? So a few questions for you. Let's take a break. I will come back and give you a little bit of, let me give you your NCAA football. Okay, there goes that idea. Freezing up on me a little bit. But so we'll be right back. 7-Eleven, AM Las Cruces, 1450, KOBE, Kelly O'Connell, 523-1450, and we'll be right back. It is 7:44, a little bit chilly outside. It is 32 degrees out there. Now, you might have heard that the president keeps bringing up whether people on the no-fly list can get weapons, which is really what they call a red herring. It's not relevant. Those people who bought the guns were not on a no-fly list. But there are 72 Homeland Security employees on a terror watch list. These are the kind of things that come up. You know, the president seems to be completely overwhelmed, but all, at the same time indifferent to the details of government. I say he's overwhelmed because there's a lot of things he doesn't seem to know that are important. And also there's a lot of contradictions in the government that he doesn't seem to know about or care about. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. I'll put you on hold. And thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly, it's Mike.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, Kelly, briefly, how can Obama be a Muslim when he accepted being a Christian?
Thing as taqiyya, which is holy lying. And at any time, according to this doctrine, that it helps Islam for a Muslim to lie, they can lie. Now, to what extent modern Muslims accept these doctrines out of Sharia law, I don't know.
So, like, sitting in that church in Chicago, that probably isn't even a legitimate church.
I mean, you're assuming that Obama's a Muslim. I don't really claim to know what he believes. He seems like a very confused person in some sense.
What would you say if I said he was an atheist, like Dawkins says?
Well, I mean, that wouldn't surprise me. He just seems lost. A lot, like last night, he's giving this television speech, and he just seems like he's floating around. There's no conviction. It's like he was working on the speech till the last minute, which is what I understand he was doing. But I don't claim to know what he believes, but there's a lot of presidents you couldn't say that about. Reagan, you knew exactly where he stood. I don't understand this. Thanks for the call, to Kelly. All right, folks, if you call in, I put you on hold. Just hang out. The president seems lost. I don't know what he thought he was going to do when he got into office. I know he thought he was going to change everything in America. But to degrade everything to me is not really a change. It's a destruction. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Kelly. It's me again.
Mike, hold on.
Kelly.
Like, that's, you know, hey, man, you got your shot. We'll take a break here and come back. 523-1450. You're listening to AM Las Cruces 1450 KOBE. I will decide who's calling in and how long it lasts. 523-1450. 523-1450. And we'll be right back on KOBE.
Lay your dreams right up to the sky.
All right, so we're dealing with radical Islam, the people who have grown up in America, who've become radicalized, taking in a weapon to their work party, their Christmas party, and shooting other people. And what do you think the best defense against this? We have a call. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Hey, Jerry. Hi, Kelly.
Good morning, Jerry. What's up?
Sorry. Well, sorry, I've hung up on you. My battery went dead. I have to agree with Obama on one thing. We cannot let the Muslim terrorists dictate what we do in the United States. And to that, that means also limiting our Second Amendment rights. So we cannot let that happen.
So what's your answer?
That means, go ahead.
What's your answer?
What's my answer? My answer is that we need to allow people to buy weapons freely. Now, those that are coming into the nation and are not currently citizens of the United States need to be very much scrutinized and very much looked at with a fine-tooth comb, especially if they're of a certain religion. There's nothing wrong with profiling.
Well, I mean,
nothing wrong with it.
I've never understood this idea that we owe it to the world or Syria or whatever. I know we screwed Syria up. And the president has tens of millions of refugees on his hands because he misplayed that, but he shouldn't project that onto us. I don't understand why the United States feel like we owe the world hundreds of thousands of refugees coming in the next couple of years, 85,000 next year and the year after, 100,000 Syrian refugees. We're just going to open up a bloodbath on Americans. There's got to be some percentage of these people that are ISIS killers. So why would we bring them in? I don't care about background checks. You can't do a background check on somebody who you don't have any paperwork on.
You're exactly right on that, Kelly. And it's what I heard was 13% of them were
Muslim. I mean, I don't even know where that number would come from, but thanks for the call. I don't know where the number would come from for 13%. The prime minister the prime minister of Beirut said that there's got to be 1%, whether it's 1% or 13%, that's totally unacceptable. What if you had another group coming from, say, China, and you knew 1% of them were mass murderers? Would you let those people in? No. And I mean, here's the thing that I'm disappointed in Americans. We don't think for ourselves as like we used to, and we don't stand up for ourselves. I mean, why don't we stand up and say, you know, you originally said, Mr. President, that we can't give weapons to the people in Syria because we can't tell the difference between citizens and ISIS fighters. We don't know how to differentiate between groups that are just defending their own lives and groups that are trying to take over the area for ISIS. You can say that when it comes to weapons, but you'll turn around and say we've got to bring in Syrians by the tens, by the hundreds of thousands. How are we supposed to background check when the head of the FBI, James Comey, has said that we literally have no idea who is safe and who's not? We don't have any way to check them. So I think that it is contingent upon the president. Here's my main problem with the president. And this is why I think that he's lost, he's confused, and this is why I think that there is a strong argument to say that he's really fallen down on the job. He has not done the job that he was hired to. Is that the number one goal, the number one rule that is has to be for an American president to protect the people. It's not to be as liberal as possible. It is not to change the society as much as you can. The main goal is to protect Americans. If that is not your goal as the president, you're in the wrong profession. And it's scary to think about the fact that even in the midst of radical attacks, that it's not relevant. It would be an interesting detail, but it's not relevant whether this group, these two people in California, was controlled by ISIS. The fact that they were not controlled by ISIS to me is even scarier. It tells me there are people who are on the verge of going native in Islam and getting ready to shoot everything up. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Thomas.
Good morning, Thomas. What's on your mind?
Good morning. I don't think the president is necessarily lost, Kelly, but I do think that a lot of people misunderstand him. He has Islamic roots. So these things are innate within him, and so he has sympathies in those areas. I think they can be misrepresented. I think they can be too much amplified by some. The lady that called earlier and said there's no way that a person could have been Islamic and then become Christian and then been a little bit confused. When a person talks like that, they have the inability to be critical in their thinking. The president, on top of all that, is a trained attorney, as you well know, critical thinking skills. And so he's a professor more than he is a president. And that's what we've got. People need to just chill out and realize that's what he is.
Yeah, but
we're just about done with him. And we're going to move on.
Yeah, but I mean, in the meantime, how do we maximize our self-defense?
I think that we need to be as smart as we possibly can. I don't think that we're going to lose any of our Second Amendment rights. We're going to be able to arm ourselves if we need to. The fact of the matter at the end of the day is we live in a democracy, an open and free society, and so there's going to be danger. There's no way to absolutely, completely secure that kind of society. We're going to have to pay for our freedom.
Well,
I don't want to be crass or crude.
I understand, but do you accept the idea that we're going to bring in hundreds of thousands of Syrians not being able to properly background check them? You think that's part of it?
No, that's not being smart. That's not being smart. But the easiest and the smartest thing to do is these people don't want to be displaced to begin with. Leave them over there in the Middle East. I'm not being hard-hearted. Leave them where they live. Create an environment over there where they can live that's safe, because they need that. Everybody needs safety. But let's don't be silly and say because we don't open the borders and bring 100,000 of them over here, we're not being kind.
Yes, I agree.
That's just ridiculous.
Good call. Thanks for the call. All right, folks. Here's the thing. I mean, when I say the president seems lost, he doesn't really seem enthusiastic to talk about these things. And what's more important to talk about? And he just seems like he is not, here's the sad thing. 7 years into this guy's term, we're still talking about, is he a Muslim? Is he a Marxist? Is he an atheist? What happened to being enthusiastic about the country that you're the leader of? It's like, he's got this enormous opportunity to lead the greatest country in history, and he's indifferent, you know? He'd rather go out on the porch and smoke a cigarette than come in and put a battle plan together to really defend Americans. Anyway, that's my take. We'll pick it up again tomorrow. Kelly O'Connell, 7:59 a.m., Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, and we'll meet you back in 22 hours. Have a wonderful day. Thanks for listening, and ciao.
Thank you. You'll keep going.